Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fast approach 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Evan and Tiki on the Fan. We'll get to a little baseball coming up this hour. The latest on Juan Soto and who's pursuing him. Why Jerry Seinfeld called WFAN last night. We'll get to all that coming up. Plus, Sean's got a Cinco de 5-0 in exactly 1 hour. But I was alluding before to the toughness that a guy like Brian Flores has and why I think the Jets are going to need that if they're looking for a new coach at the end of the year. And I want to show you something. I have six audio clips. Is it six audio clips? It's five audio clips.
It's five, Evan.
Thank you.
Yes.
Of Jeff Ulbrich and my issues with Jeff Ulbrich. Okay?
Go ahead.
As a fan, this bothers me. And I want to take you back to right after the Jets got their asses kicked and then their noses rubbed in the mud by the Arizona Cardinals. This is what Jeff Ulbrich said in his opening statement after that embarrassing loss to the Arizona Cardinals.
They were not prepared to play. We didn't execute even close to our standard, and that falls on my shoulders 100%. I didn't do a good enough job getting these guys ready. I thought the physicality and the effort was fine. That was not the issue. It was execution, and then that was all three phases. So until we get that right, this thing will not turn.
So he took the blame. And sometimes when coaches do that, it's like, cool. Like, Jordy Fernandez did that with the Nets last week, and
but
I was like, cool.
But you should take the blame.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it's going to come back to you whether you take the blame or not.
Right? It will cost you your job.
If guys aren't prepared, if you make bad decisions in real time, and players are not giving it their all, it's going to come back to the head coach.
He said effort was not an issue, by the way. He said that was not an issue.
Well, I don't think effort was an issue. Watching him on tape, it's assignments.
Right.
It's being in the right place at the right time.
Missing 20 tackles is just, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Technique. Guys don't tackle anymore.
Yeah, no. Well, the Jets don't tackle.
I mean, you don't practice tackling anymore.
Well, they did today, which was nice to hear. I heard they spent 15 minutes tackling.
Good.
Which is nice. So he puts it all on him. You're good with that. Okay, I'm sort of good with that. And then he continues to blame himself.
And obviously, I did a poor job of getting us ready for this team in that way. Tackling. Edge setting. Getting off of blocks, and then I got to continue to try to find ways to put him in a better position to be successful.
This is where it started to bother me, because it's like, all right, dude, I get it. You want to take the blame. It's very, you know, leadership of you.
Yeah.
But, dude, it's on your players. Like, your players didn't perform. So I heard that, and I'm being honest with you. I didn't love it. So then Monday comes around, and I say, let me listen to him Monday. He's watched the tape. Maybe he'll come out and rip the players, and listen to the way this starts. This starts good, like I'm about to get the blood I want, and then he goes back to being Ulbrich. Take a listen.
Wasn't good enough, and an egregious criminal amount of missed tackles.
Oh, okay.
Not good enough. We need to find ways to drill it better and give these guys an opportunity to like. That's where I'm so disappointed in myself that I didn't get these guys prepared for this tackling game. Like, we knew that was a point of emphasis, and we thought we drilled it. Obviously, didn't drill it well enough, and got to keep finding ways to help these guys be successful. So it's not good enough.
Why does that bother
you? It bothers me because he started off by being like, this was egregious and disgusting.
It was.
And then it was. I agree. I love that part. And then you hear him in the middle pivot back to, it's my fault. Dude. I'm sure some of it's your fault. What about the players? So I hear this again, and I'm actually starting to get angry, and then a reporter calls him out. Listen to this interchange. He says, hey, coach, you know, very honorable of you. Isn't it on the players? Listen to this.
Yes, you've been very accountable, over-the-top accountable, and I'm just kind of curious, you know, isn't it on the players, particularly with tackling? I mean, that's such a basic thing, and isn't tackling a huge part of tackling effort?
Effort is absolutely a part of it, getting population with the football. You know, it's a shared responsibility. It's all of us. You know, there's finding ways to drill it and keep improving as a tackler. And then there's definitely the responsibility of the player to get it done. So we share the responsibility in that.
He refuses to rip players, Tate.
Well, he shouldn't rip players. He's a head coach, and the last thing you want to do is throw your player under the bus. I will never say he's wrong for not throwing his players under the bus, because no coach should ever do that, ever. Under no circumstances you do that to the NARPs, the guys in the seats who don't know what they're talking about.
I have
about.
A counter, though, quickly. Gerard Mayo.
Yeah, but it was different. He called his team soft. He didn't say Sauce Gardner is not tackling well, DJ Reed is in the wrong position, or whatever, Quincy Williams, you know, can't get off blocks. That's not what he says. He said his whole team was soft.
Yes.
And they responded to it because it was about the entire team. It wasn't about the individuals. So with Jeff Ulbrich, though, like, when you talk about effort, effort is such a, like, I don't know, it's like a catch-all word. But it doesn't really describe what's going on. When a coach says it's about getting all hats on the ball, effort is getting to the point of attack. But once you get to the point of attack, it becomes technique, right? And what do you do? And so let's take Sauce, for example, because this is the most famous missed tackle in the history of the world, apparently.
Wow.
Last week against Trey McBride, he was right where he needed to be.
Yes.
Right? He's in man coverage coming across. He wraps him up. But the technique was bad. So instead of, you know, focusing on wrapping and grabbing both of his legs, he's trying to, like, throw him to the ground. And, like, that works with when you're in fifth grade, right? You could throw a kid to the ground. But when you got a big, strong tight end, technique matters. And so what Coach Ulbrich is talking about is they're not doing a good enough job drilling technique. The effort is getting guys to the ball. There were a bunch of guys at the ball, right, on that exact play I'm talking about. But the way Sauce tried to tackle him, he threw him clear of everybody, and next thing you know, he's picking up 10 extra yards.
So my issue is this. I believe Robert Saleh was portrayed, certainly with the way he talked to the media and what he said publicly, as a player's coach, that he loved his players and was so sweet to his players.
Right. I think his players loved him.
No doubt. I think his players loved him. I wonder if that became a detriment to him by the end, if he wasn't tough enough on his players. Mm. They were a very undisciplined team. And what I'm seeing so far from Coach Ulbrich is he's going out of his way. I would agree with the way the reporter toned that. Yeah. It's almost over the top. I'm not saying he doesn't have any responsibility, but it's an over-the-top reaction to, it's on me, it's on me, it's on me. And what I'm starting to wonder about as a Jet fan, with this roster in particular, is maybe the loving the guys so much and defending them to a T so much, maybe that's not right for this room. Maybe a toughness would help them. That's what I'm wondering. So that's what's warming me to Brian Flores.
And that's why you like Brian Flores.
A part of it. It's not the whole thing. It's a part of it. Because tell me where I'm wrong on this. You don't think Saleh and Ulbrich have come across very player-friendly?
No, I think it's just complicated. It's hard to simplify it to one thing and then say, well, because this coach lacks this trait, he's not going to be a good head coach. Or Jeff Ulbrich and Robert Saleh are players' coaches, therefore they're not tough enough, which is nonsense. I mean, at some point, it does come down to individual responsibility. That's the one thing I like about that reporter question. It is on the players. The problem is athletes and players in today's game aren't willing to be self-accountable publicly. Mm-hmm. Right? They'll do it to their teammates, but they won't stand up in front of a media, or more importantly, or more aptly, social media, and take responsibility for when they play terrible. Right?
Yeah.
And so, as a result, we all think they don't care. Of course they care, but they don't know how to be self-deprecating.
Right.
It's such an egomaniacal world that we live in these days. And, like, athletes want to be thought of as strong and awesome and the best and everything else. So showing any kind of fallibility, it's against their nature. It's against the bro code, so to speak. I mean, it's stupid because it ends up putting you on the wrong side of agile.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Inflation, but still, I think that's why guys are afraid to admit when they do something wrong, because they think it's gonna, I don't know, stick with them.
Right.
But it doesn't. The only thing that matters is balling.
I think what I'm afraid of is that.
What was that? Go be better.
Well, no,
see,
clearly,
that's literally the only thing that matters.
No doubt, of course, and that's all we want. And it just feels like for the last 3 years,
but it's not what you want. Because what you want,
I want to win.
No, you want them to acknowledge that they're bad.
No, I want, you know what? Not really. What I want is them to win, and I'm trying to figure out over the last 3 years why that hasn't happened.
Well, I'll tell you
and
why.
And I'm thinking that coaching has a lot to do with it.
I'll tell you why, because it's very easy to lie to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. You screw something up, yeah, that wasn't my fault. Yeah, that was somebody else's fault. And if nobody tells you otherwise,
you believe it.
You start believing
it. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Exactly.
George Costanza.
And so,
hi, Jerry.
So too much of that goes on, like where guys tell themselves, well, that was his fault. That wasn't my fault. And so they remain not culpable, even though they absolutely are. And so it's just really hard, and I think, to get people, I'm talking athletes, but this is really just people, to admit they're wrong and do it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you now are flawed. And
right.
Nobody wants to be flawed.
What I want is the perception to change on the New York Jets. Mm-hmm. And I want them to win games. And the feeling I get, because I'm not in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Of course I'm not. The perception I have gotten from Coach Saleh and I'm getting from Coach Olbrich is almost too lovey-dovey. And I wonder if that's hurting them getting the most out of their players. I wonder if Flores coached this team, if he'd get more out of this team.
I'll give you my most famous personal example.
Go ahead.
Which is fumbling.
Yeah.
Right? And everybody knew about this. I've told this story 1,000 times. Thomas George came to me and said, "Hey, Teek, you got a fumbling problem. This is in training camp." I was like, "What the hell are you talking about? I do not have a fumbling problem." He said, "Just go look at the stats." Looked at the stats. He was right. But I didn't acknowledge it.
Mm.
I just kind of was like, yeah, whatever. It is what it is. I still kept fumbling. You know how it got fixed? Someone came and taught me how to fix it. Right? Gerald Ingram. Tom Coughlin comes, the new head coach. My new running back coach is Gerald Ingram. He taught me how to fix it. So there is a teaching element to this. And so when Jeff Olbrich is talking about it's on me, he's talking about him and his staff. So the things that are that this Jet team is doing wrong, they're not teaching it correctly. Because why else is it still happening over and over and over and over again? Because the athlete thinks he knows, but they're not teaching it correctly. And if they are teaching it, they're not making it important enough to be learned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that's where Jeff is right, 100% right about taking ownership of the things that are going wrong with this Jets team, because you got to teach it, but you got to make them care to learn it.
Yeah, I think individually you're right, and that's why I'm not saying necessarily he should call out individual players,
mm-hmm.
but we all saw, and I didn't think this was going to happen, but we all saw Jerod Mayo get a lot of crap for, in general, talking about his team being too soft.
Right.
And there's a part of me that just kind of wants to see a Jet coach say something like that about his team after they get their ass kicked by the Cardinals. And maybe I'm living in a high-in-the-sky, pie-in-the-sky world, that could make a difference. That maybe that public comment that Mayo did could actually work on a team
like this. I think Jared has a great pulse on his team. By the way, they're young. There's zero expectation for this team.
He still may be on the hot seat because Robert Kraft may be crazy.
Yeah, whatever, but he's still, the team is young. There was no expectation for them.
Yes.
And so you can say things like, you guys are soft because nobody cares. So if you guys care and you want to do something about it, great. If not, again, nobody cares. Everybody cares about the Jets.
But at 3-7, isn't that the moment? 3-7. No. You're at the moment
But here's the thing. Everybody still cares.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we still care, but it's also desperate times call for desperate measures.
The Jets could finish this season 5-12. Everybody's going to care.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest disappointments in Jet history.
I know. The Patriots finished 5-12. Nobody's going to care.
Bo-hum.
So it's almost easier, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not costing you anything. It's your first year as the head coach, Jared Mayo. So you're rebuilding anyways. And if you accelerate it by being callous, great. If not, nobody cares. So it's different strokes. So you can't draw on what the Patriots head coach has done and the effect that it's had to any other situation. Because it's different.
You know
it's
what I'm drawing different. On? I'm drawing on the last few years of underachievement and the last few years of coaches publicly, I don't know what they're doing privately, but publicly basically coddling their players. That's what I'm drawing on. And I'm looking for any kind of change because we're all desperate for it to change. And I don't know if Woody's thinking the way I'm thinking. Honestly, I don't think Woody's thinking. Honestly, I don't know what he's thinking. Maybe Woody Johnson could be the next Attorney General of the United States.
Oh, Lord.
He'd be a better choice than the current one. But, like, I think that sometimes you look for the complete opposite of what you currently have. And what the Jets have currently had has been what appears to be very player-friendly, player-centric. It's on the coaches. And I think when they look for something different, I'm going to want something different.
I just worry when people talk about the player-centric side because what's not player-centric? Like, who's not a player-centric coach? I think the best, trust me, Andy Reid, player-centric coach.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin, even though he's hard as he feels, player-centric coach.
But don't you think he's tough? You said it about Russell Wilson. Russ, right?
Well, he doesn't take anything from you.
Yeah.
So it's his way or there's no way, right? There's just something about Mike's presence, and I don't know if you guys have ever been around him, like personally been around him. There's just like an aura about him. You feel it. There's a dead-ass seriousness about him.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That when you feel someone coming in the room like that, you just listen. Tom Coughlin was that way.
Mm.
He was just dead-ass serious all the time, almost to a fault. But he walked in the room, you took him seriously. Now, the challenge with being a player's coach is sometimes you're, like, jovial, and you're not serious.
Right.
And all it takes is that one moment for your team not to take you seriously, and it's lost.
Mm.
It's done. You'll never get it again. And so there's a method to doing it, and it's really hard to manage. Being a head coach is hard. Of 60-something men, including the practice squad, who all have different backgrounds and motivations and reasons that they're doing what they're doing, or, I don't know, goals and aspirations. It's hard.
I know why. You know how I know it's hard to be a head coach in the NFL? Because we as football fans, Jet and Giant fans, over the last 20 combined years, have seen a lot of people come into our town to be our head coach. And to a T, they've almost all sucked. Now, they give you teases at times, like, I think we got something. I think Ben McAdoo's got it. And then eventually, they all fail.
Right.
So trust me, when you say it's tough to be a head coach, we know. Because very few of them have actually succeeded.
No, most don't.
Most don't. 888-808-1019, the toll-free number. Let's go to Rory calling from the Bronx. How are you, Rory?
Doing all right, guys. Doing all right. Thanks for having me on. Much appreciated.
What's up, dude?
Diehard Jets fan here, season ticket holder. I wanted to comment on a couple of things you guys had said, but I do have a point I wanted to get to first. And I've been screaming it from the rooftop since last year when everyone was blaming Zach Wilson. This football team cannot run the ball. And the good football teams in the NFL, you look at the leaders in rushing for teams, you look at the top of that list, every one of those teams is a playoff team. Hickey knows this. Games are won and lost in the trenches.
Yeah.
And
because the little plays happen there. The little plays happen in the trenches. The important third down plays, they happen in the trenches. You know what I mean? It's the pass protection that happens in the trenches. We need to run out the clock, and that happens in the trenches.
Of all the things that have happened to the Jets this season, I think I may argue that the most surprising failure of the New York Jets is being 30th in the NFL in rushing yards when you have what was supposed to be an improved offensive line and you've got Breece Hall and Braylon Allen.
Yeah.
Like, being 30th.
Will you ever get that nickname for those two?
Being 30th is crazy. Excuse me, are you talking?
Yes, I am.
Did you say something interesting or are you being trollish? Before, because I couldn't hear you. So just let me know. Was it trollish or was it like an interesting point to our very intelligent discussion we're having?
I'm going to take a troll and make it an interesting point.
Go ahead.
Boy, 30th in rushing. Week two, we were looking for a nickname for those two guys.
Great point. That's a great dynamite drop in, Monty.
Yeah.
That's from Major League.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a good point. You're right.
It is.
We were looking for kind of a name. You want to know why? Because we thought, wow, they got something here with Breece Hall and Braylon Allen. And look what we've seen. Look at this. The 30th in rushing.
Yeah.
That's almost the biggest surprise the Jets have had this season. I would say that's number one.
Ground B&B.
Huh? Was that the nickname you initially had for them?
Not me. Right. You liked it. A listener came up with it.
Oh, Ground B&B?
Instead of Airbnb.
Ah, yeah, I did like that. Oh, the good old days. We were 2-1 and feeling so good.
6 weeks ago.
Seriously.
Right.
They had beaten the Patriots on a Thursday night, the home opener. I was in the building in my season tickets. And that, yes, the next day it was like Ground B&B. And we're feeling so good. And here we are on November 13th. And it's like they're 30th in rushing and they suck.
All there right in front of them.
And they have a new head coach. Ay, ay, ay. Lee's on Long Island. What's up, Lee?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I actually wanted to touch on the discussion you guys were having the last couple days regarding Daniel Jones and which quarterbacks to replace him, because Evan, I've had this argument with you in the past, back when it was you and Joe.
Yes.
And you're like, we got to see what we have in Brooks Bollinger. And I mean, nonsense like that. And that really was a conversation you guys had, by the way. But now you guys have Tiki Barber. And Tiki, you're a professional football player. So maybe you can back me up on this. I think Evan's take is awful about getting Tommy DeVito in there, because his logic the other day was, well, you want to see what you have in this guy. But we all agree that the quarterback for the New York Giants next year isn't on the roster right now.
Right.
So I believe it is irresponsible for Brian Daboll to worry about developing Tommy DeVito over his responsibility to develop guys like Malik Nabers and Tyrone Tracy and Jalen Hyland, all these young guys. Hold on a second. And I think when you put a quarterback in like Tommy DeVito and you have to limit the playbook, and if he's not that effective, you could be stunting their development, which is not what you want to do when you're going to have a rookie next year coming in to take over that team.
No, I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, we don't know that Tommy DeVito doesn't know the playbook. I would say that having an offseason and apparently working closely with Dabes, at least that's what it looked like in the preseason, that he does know this playbook and that he will throw the ball downfield. I mean, we saw it last year. We saw it in the Green Bay game. He was unafraid to make or try to make plays. Now, he's not going to be perfect. He's probably going to turn the ball over because that's what young players do. But this offense was built specifically this year, and we all talked about this for a month, to be more explosive. This team does not have explosives. Unless Tyrone Tracy splits one, where are the explosives in this game plan? And part of that is because what we played when we talked about Daniel Jones and that Todd McShay post-draft analysis, Daniel's scared to throw the ball, or he wants to wait to throw the ball till he knows it's the right throw. Tommy DeVito doesn't care. And for young players, you can allow them to do that. It's partly that, to that last caller. But I think it's also a business decision. People don't want to see Daniel Jones anymore.
They're done with him.
People don't want to see Drew Lock because he's here for a year. People want to see Tommy DeVito.
But do you buy, because Lee had a problem with it, and I appreciate Lee remembering the past, because my opinions that I would offer about the Jets, let me see what we have in this guy, is the exact same opinion I have about the Giants. Like, I took it and used it because that's honestly how I feel, which is once my season is over, quote, let me see what I got.
Yeah.
And so Brooks Bollinger is not the correct name. It was Greg McElroy.
Right.
It was Bryce Petty.
Right.
It was guys like that. That I said, let me just see what I got. Is there any part of you that has that, let me just see what we have in a guy?
Yes. Yes.
That's all I was saying.
Because, I know that there are lots of things that determine success and failure in the NFL, especially for quarterbacks. But what I've increasingly come to rely upon, it's not, what's this guy's arm talent like? What's his leg, you know, is he a running quarterback? It's less that. Forget the statistics. It's, in a moment, can he do something that is surprising? that makes something out of nothing. And we talked about this yesterday. There are about four or five quarterbacks that do this currently in the NFL, and those are the only ones I'd want on my team. Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and I don't know, maybe there's only four, right? There's just not a lot of them.
All in the AFC, by the way.
But Jalen Hurts to an extent, but not
Stafford.
Not much. No, Stafford's not that guy.
He's Jared Goff?
Not even Goff, because he's a prescribed quarterback. Ben Johnson has him perfectly dialed in. He gets the ball out of his hand. He knows exactly where he's going. They're well versed. They're well taught. He gets things perfectly. The challenge is when you have a bad team, you need somebody creative.
Yeah.
Tommy was creative last year.
No, he was.
Even if it wasn't perfect.
And just quickly on Lee's point about developing guys, and if you play these guys, you're not going to develop them. Jalen Hyatt, to this point in his career, is 100-yard receiving game. Tommy DeVito was the quarterback.
Right. And what playbook are we limiting? We're not the greatest show on turf here. They can't score a touchdown at home. Right. So what playbook
honestly,
are they limiting?
When people start saying that, if people are talking about, well, you need to put in more stuff, no, you need to simplify. You need to do what you do well, and that's it, and say, stop me. And then when you stop us, we'll do something else.
Speaking of Jared Goff threw how many interceptions
Five.
The other night?
Five. One of them was a halftime throwaway. Two of them were not worth a gaze.
So there was
there were five in total.
There was a guy. He was literally on his bed. He was just hanging out. And he created a fake Jared Goff stat and then tweeted it out. They just made it up. He said, you know what? Jared Goff has thrown four interceptions in a game seven times. And you know what his record is in those seven games? 7-0. Completely made up. Here is proof that you can make up information and it can spread like wildfire. Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee
Amazing
show.
Stat, though. Is this a true stat that he's done four more picks seven times and he's won every single one of those games?
Yes.
Is that real?
Yep, 7-0.
That's wild. I mean, that's why stats are for what Big Mike used to say.
Yeah. What are they for? It's called made-up stat.
All right.
So what I think we should do is, once a week, without telling anyone, but you, a loyal Evan and Tiki listener, will know this, each of us should just make up a stat, like a crazy stat. Tweet it out, see if it goes viral, and then laugh when people fall for it.
Right.
So do you have one? Tiki should definitely do it, because he's got credibility, and you very rarely tweet. So if all of a sudden you just tweet out some... Actually, you know what? You probably shouldn't, because then you're going to get crushed, and it's like, Tiki Barber, son of a bastard, how could he do that? I think if it's Sean, me, or Loogie, it's like, whatever. Some schmuck made up a stat and went
viral.
I'll
make a burner account.
Yeah.
You should. Bad Tiki.
I got it. The Jets are undefeated versus quarterbacks named Anthony all time.
That's not bad. You want to try that one?
Throw it out there, see if people catches it.
Throw it out there. I got to think about that now for a second.
Maybe it's right.
How many quarterbacks are named Anthony?
I'm trying to think of any. I can't name any off the top of my head.
Does Tony count, though?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so Tony Romo. Yeah.
He doesn't go by Anthony.
Yeah, no, but his real name,
but his name is Anthony.
Yeah. Exactly.
Are we sure
is
about
it?
That? Yes.
I mean, I don't know, actually. I have to look that
if
up.
If you're a Tony, you're an Anthony.
There's no, like, straight-up Tonys anymore?
You ate the Oni? No, I don't think it's... I think you're Anthony, and it's short as Tony.
How about this? You ready for this? I have the answer on Tony Romo. It's actually kind of surprising. His name is Antonio.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. Antonio Ramiro Romo. How about that?
Now...
So it's not Anthony, it's Antonio.
Is this real news? This isn't fake news? Are you sure this is a...
It's the internet.
It's Wikipedia, because, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you can never be sure.
I am...
No, it is. If you go to Pro Football Reference, they... do you believe Pro Football Reference?
Yes.
Antonio Ramiro Romo on Pro Football Reference.
Okay. Because Wikipedia had this wild rumor about Evan once.
So. No, but I'm telling you, it's Pro Football Reference.
Oh, no, that's...
Pro
that's
Football Reference
reliable.
Is always accurate, isn't it?
100%.
No, it's not.
It's not?
It's not? Are you serious?
Pro Football Reference started posting, like, the Nickelodeon MVP award once.
Really?
Which, like, cracked me up when that happened. So, you never know. Anyhow, we'll come back.
It's tweeted, Evan. It's out in the universe.
Which one?
Wild stat. I put wild in capitals, colon. The Jets are, in caps, undefeated all time for starting quarterbacks named Anthony. They will face Anthony Richardson on Sunday.
Do you think Rodgers will bring it up on McAfee next week?
Let's find out.
Well, good luck, Sean. We appreciate it. I'm not surprised you're the first one to do this.
Yeah, he's desperate for hugs.
I'm a pig.
He really is. We'll come back with more of your calls. Plus, why did Jerry Seinfeld call our dear friend Big Mac last night? We'll find out. I got to tell you a funny story that you may have already heard about. But I'll give you the perspective of a listener. So I was driving home last night after our program, and Chris McMonagle was on.
I didn't hear Lugi. I apologize. I was talking to my wife on the phone, and we always talk for about a half hour, so I missed the Lugi hour. I went right to Big Mac. So no offense, Lugi. You know I respect you and love you.
No, none taken.
But I didn't hear anything of what you said. So I'm listening to Chris McMonagle, who, I got to tell you, one of my favorite listens on the radio station. I'm a big fan of Chris. So I'm listening to Chris. He's saying stupid stuff about the Giants. He's saying dumb stuff about the NBA courts. But then he made a really good comparison. He compared the NBA courts to the Seinfeld episode where the KFC sign was so bright.
No.
It was shining into Kramer's apartment where Jerry started to live. I think they switched apartments.
No, it was not KFC. It was Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers.
Gotta
I apologize.
Be fair here. It was not Kenny Rogers. It was Kenny Rogers Roasters. We don't want misinformation on the radio.
Whatever. So Big Mac made that comparison. And while I disagree with him about the courts, I thought it was very funny.
Huh.
And then Paul Rosenberg, who we all love, but Rosie likes to say stuff to get a reaction. He reacted to Big Mac by saying, one of the only good Seinfeld episodes. In fact, forget about me describing it. Here's the actual exchange that occurred that I was listening to on my ride home last night.
I can't even watch it. I feel like Kramer when the Kenny Rogers was outside his window. And it's like, you know, it's like all red. Can't watch it.
One of the few good Seinfeld episodes.
Only someone looking for an argument would put it that way. I'm not going to have this debate with you. I'm not going to argue the virtues of Seinfeld with you. Stop it now.
And
one of the few good episodes of the greatest comedy in history. I mean, come on, stop it.
So I actually was prompted to text Big Mac. I was pulling into my house at this moment, and I texted him and said, "You're right. Rosie was baiting a fight with you."
He definitely was, because there's no way you've watched Seinfeld and said that's the only good episode.
Of course!
There are hundreds of them.
Asinine opinion. So I texted that to Big Mac, and I went inside, and that was my day. All of a sudden, about 45 minutes later, Big Mac texts me these words, "Jerry called in." So my first reaction is, what's Recco up to? Literally, I thought about Recco. Then I thought about Jerry Ferrara, and I'm like, there's a nickname going on. Why is he calling in? And then I was like, Seinfeld? So yeah, then Jerry Seinfeld calls in to basically say, look, I'm okay with Rosenberg not liking my show. And then he made a very funny comparison about Rosie only liking a few episodes that maybe you'll be offended by. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Seinfeld.
Well, look, we made 180 episodes.
Yes.
So we made three good ones. We're like the Giants, you know.
That's true. That's true. You
yeah,
had
that. We're 3-177. That's our record.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. Now, the next thing Jerry did.
I told you guys I saw Jerry last year, right?
You did at like in Nashville or something?
I think
in Dallas, Teak? I want to say in Texas.
Nashville. I think I can't remember.
Denver? Where in the world is Tiki Barber?
Denver, wherever I was. He was in the elevator. He had a tux on.
I was going to say Indianapolis could be a good bet.
Yeah, that's true. You're always there.
Maybe. I get ready for my fifth Indianapolis game.
I think it was Atlanta, by the way. For some reason, I think it was Atlanta that you ran into.
Might have been Secaucus.
I can't remember. But whatever. We were on a high floor. I get on the elevator. He's on the elevator.
Right.
I'm like, Jerry Seinfeld.
Look at that!
I said, I think he said something like, oh, how's the new gig with Evan?
Well, he's a listener of the station. He called into Steve a lot. But one thing I picked up on is that he wasn't aware that Big Mac was a Yankee fan. Look, Big Mac's on in the overnight. I don't know if Jerry's up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So Big Mac identifies he's a Yankee fan. And then Jerry Seinfeld did something that I don't even think he realizes was as funny as it was. So what he did was, Chris McMonagle, and I mean this as a compliment, is the most intense, insane Yankee fan that works here. And I don't mean any disrespect to you, Sean, or BT, or anybody else, but Big Mac gets physically ill when the Yankees lose games. There are stories from the World Series game you went to him where you saw it. He's like me with the Mets, with the Yankees. Like, physically, he shakes, he's nuts. We saw him the other day. I brought up the World Series. He turned green. It's like he didn't want to talk about it. So that's just some background on Chris McMonagle. Jerry doesn't know this. He just knows him as a Yankee fan and proceeds to do this to Chris McMonagle.
Tell me about the pain of the fifth inning. Tell me about that.
Really?
I want to know, what did that
do
feel
I have to
like
go over this with Jerry
fan?
Seinfeld right now? Really?
Yeah. I want to hear your pain.
Jerry. That is, I'm not kidding.
What was the worst of the three plays for you? Which one was the worst? The judge play was the worst.
Well, you know,
it's a guy, you don't want to see that happen to that guy. He's a nice guy. He's a great, obviously one of the, a great player.
Oh, he's needling the hell out of him.
And he's tattooed with that moment.
Forever. No doubt. It's still, honestly, I'm not kidding. A day hasn't gone by yet that I haven't thought about it for a little bit. In the moment,
that makes me feel so good to hear that. I can't tell you.
And I'm glad I'm pleasing you, Jerry. In the moment,
my pleasure.
Well, thank you very much.
Again, if he does that to any Yankee fan, it's cute. He's doing this to somebody who's literally in physical pain talking about it.
So was Big Mac appreciative of Jerry's ribbing?
Suck it!
I think he was. Or is he now of the Rosieberg? There's only one episode that I like.
I want to take Jerry. I want to take you to one last clip.
All right, go ahead.
And this is the clip no one's going to pay attention to. But trust me, something very awkward happened at the end. I don't know if it's because Chris was mad at Jerry. I don't think it was that. I think Chris was thrilled that Jerry called in. He got over the Yankee stuff. It's Jerry Seinfeld. And he made a comment to Jerry that I think he thought was going to be a joke. And you could tell Mr. Seinfeld was not thrilled. And Big Mac, very quickly, like he's a cornerback, backed up insanely quickly. And by the way, I've talked to Big Mac. He confirms this is what happened.
Okay.
He has confirmed that he made a joke. He clearly saw it wasn't going over well. And was like, So I present to you the last thing Big Mac said to Jerry, in which he tried to take a shot at Seinfeld, and Seinfeld wasn't having it. Take a listen.
In my opinion, it's the greatest show, the comedy in the history of television. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. I'm a huge fan of you.
Thank you so much.
I even labored through your Pop-Tart movie. That's how much I liked you. So
my Emmy nominated number one.
No, it actually did make me laugh.
We had a lot of fun.
It really it did. It made me laugh. And plus, you know, just I'm a huge cereal guy. So just the idea of you know, comedic and very much so. But it also there was interesting tidbits in there about learning about how, like, the breakfast food industry was something I was unaware of.
He didn't know what to do, so he's like, I love cereal.
It became something to learn from.
Because he saw what was happening.
Right. He used the word labored through.
I'm intrigued by it. I have not seen it. So I can't give you an opinion on it.
I mean, it's spoofish.
Yeah.
So it's entertaining.
It's what it's supposed to be.
Exactly right. It's what it's supposed to be.
It's lighthearted, funny. Maybe you do take a thing or two about post versus whatever.
Yes, 100%.
And that's it. And you laugh at it and you move on.
Right.
But Big Mac said I even...
Frosted Pop-Tarts?
Yeah. No. I labored through it.
I was entertained by it. Actually, because maybe it was just because I was watching it during the summer and it was like nothing else going on.
Yeah.
You're just mindless. Right. I was entertained by it.
It sounds fun. I mean, it sounds crazy, but... I labored through it. Hey, you mean my Emmy Award? And Chris was like, I'm out. It was great. I loved it. I'm just kidding.
I learned a thing or two.
I think I only found it because I didn't know about it, the movie. I only found it because we were overseas somewhere.
Oh, really?
And it happened to be on. And I was like, what the hell is this Jerry Seinfeld?
Let me give it a try.
Pop-Tart movie.
Is that when you were in Italy?
No. It was somewhere where TV wasn't English. I don't know where, and it was the only thing we could watch.
Oh, right.
So it was like, all right, let's watch this. And it was actually good.
And it was good. I'd give it a try. I'm always looking for stuff to watch. And you know what's funny? You have access to so much stuff now with Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu,
It was.
It's so tough to find stuff.
We were somewhere where English, the TV was, no, it was in Japan. So it was just 2 years ago. And so the TV is not English.
Right.
So the only way we could watch TV was to log into our Netflix account.
Mm.
And so we watched it on our, like, hooked to the TV via Chromecast.
Hey.
And it was like, let's find something on Netflix.
However you can get the entertainment, man, that's for sure. Well, good job, Chris McMonagle. And good job by Paul Rosenberg for just making a dumb comment that somehow got Jerry to call in.
As much as I want to let my dear friend Chris McMonagle twist in the wind here, he's clearly getting worked. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld is dry, sarcastic. He was joking with Chris.
He may have been,
in
by
that
the
clip.
Way.
I think he definitely was.
100%.
I think Jerry clearly has a sense of humor, so
yes.
I think he may have been being worked.
Absolutely.
But nevertheless, he got worked.
And another thing here, too. Dude, you have Jerry Seinfeld on the air. If Tiffany Amber Thiessen came in here, I would forget about the Mets season. Can you relax and not get mad at Jerry Seinfeld for needling you? And by the way, Jerry's a huge Met fan, so it's like if Evan did it or if I did it.
I don't
this
think,
is Jerry Seinfeld.
He should have needled the Mets right back.
Right, or do that, exactly.
I don't think he was like pissed off. I think it was more like, this is the thing that really hurts me still, and now I'm having to hurt with a guy I respect.
I understand
doing
that.
It to me. So I don't think Big Mac was ever upset. But I just thought it was more fun. I thought it was funnier than people realize because I know how serious Big Mac is.
But Evan, you're...
I don't know if half the audience even knows that. Mm.
But McMonagle loves Seinfeld. He said that. He got a chance essentially to meet Jerry Seinfeld. If you were to meet Abe Lincoln, and it was right after the Jets lost the Super Bowl, you would give Honest Abe your joy and adulation. You wouldn't be like, hey, excuse me, Abe, thank you for everything you've done for the country, but you know what, the Jets just lost the Super Bowl.
No, I'd be dead to me at that point.
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, if the Jets lost the Super Bowl?
Dude, you got to meet Abe Lincoln?
I ain't talking to him, no.
Wow.
I'd refuse to talk to him.
What if Abe needled you?
I'd be very pissed.
What'd you think of Aaron Rodgers' 2-minute drill?
Is that an Abe Lincoln impression?
I'd probably punch him in the face. Yeah.
I would
deck Lincoln in the face.
You would
Honest
punch
Abe.
And you know I love Abe. I have a picture of him in my office. Have you seen that picture?
Mm.
It's there every day. You don't see it?
I'll tell you one thing. If you straight up assault Abe Lincoln, you're going to need a Lincoln lawyer.
Very good. I can't get over that you're in my office every day. You never noticed that an Abe Lincoln picture hanging there?
No.
Did you notice it, Sean?
Yes.
How do you not notice it?
I have no idea.
Abe Lincoln, Ben Simmons, and Jacob DeGrom.
Steve Cohen might be there as well.
It's not a real Abe Lincoln picture.
It's a real Abe Lincoln picture, yeah.
I'm just saying it's next to all the other
garbage. No, first of all, that's not true about Ben Simmons, so take the lie out of your mouth. There's sort of a picture of Ben Simmons, but I'm erasing it.
Wait, isn't it like fake faces on them?
So the net picture was of Durant, Harden, and Kyrie, and I put new faces over them. So, like, Nick Claxton's there.
The Nets still in the league.
I think I still have Spencer Dinwiddie. It hasn't been updated.
Do you want me to go get the Abe picture to show Tiki?
No, Abe Lincoln I have. I know I have Abe Lincoln. I have Abe Lincoln and Steve Cohen. You were right about Steve Cohen and Jacob DeGrom. Those exist. Did you know I have a DeGrom picture up there?
No.
Do you just sit down and, like, stare at me or something?
Yes.
Wow. He has DeGrom as a centaur up there.
Yeah, DeGrom is a centaur.
What are you, A-Rod?
I've got my big three is Abe Lincoln, Steve Cohen, and Jacob DeGrom. Jeez.
Wow.
So if you were starting a team today, those are the three guys.
I mean, they're up there.
I'm a loser.
They're up there. I was thinking about my favorite TV shows of all time when I found out that BT's a 90210 guy. Because I'm like, 90210 is definitely in the top five. And Seinfeld's in the top five. Totally. Friends is in the top five.
All comedies, huh?
How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, my God.
Comedies.
And All in the Family.
No Knight Rider.
No, 90210 is the only non-comedy that's in my top
five. The A-Team?
No. Nope. Hmm. No. All in the Family is number one, though. I think it's All in the Family number one. Mm-hmm. 90210 is number two.
Friends.
It's either How I Met Your Mother is very good.
It is very good.
It's very good.
All the shows you mentioned were very good, but there's not a lot of diversity in your picks. They were all sitcoms, which is fine. That's your list. All fair.
Says a lot about his attention.
Have you ever watched other shows? Have you gone out of your comfort zone?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Very good show. Top 15.
Modern Family.
Melrose Place.
Melrose Place, not that good. I watched it. Modern Family was okay.
The setting was bad. The setting of Melrose was bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good follow to...
You know what I'm shocked at?
I'll give you two old shows that I also love, not top 10, top 15. Three's Company, The Jeffersons. Those two are up there.
I agree.
Very good. The problem with Three's Company... How many times can there be a misunderstanding?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's the same storyline. Jack Tripper's screwing around with this one. No, he's not. They're just trying to put a painting on. Like, we get it. They're miscommunicating. They don't know.
Well, that's what happens when women live with men.
Is that what happens?
Platonically.
Two more I'll put up there in the top 15. South Park.
Tremendous.
And I got to put Family Guy up there.
Also tremendous. I thought you'd be an Everybody Loves Raymond guy. Long Island sports writer.
No.
Animation is hard for me to get into that because it's not really acting.
It's not, but it's still good.
I know, but it's just like it's voice acting.
Yeah.
And it's just, the visual can just mess with you.
I get you.
Everybody Loves Raymond's how I got into the business.
Really?
I wanted to be Raymond.
What did Raymond do? I don't even know.
Sports writer for Newsday.
Well, about that.
He was a sports writer, yeah.
About that. Yeah, I never got into it. King of Queens, same thing. Like, they're fine. I just never... The test of a great show, and to me, those five shows all fit the bill. I can rewatch it at any moment.
Right.
If you put... Seinfeld on any episode I'm in, any episode of Friends I'm in, any episode of 90210, I'll break down the season with you. I'm in. All in the Family, my God. That's number one by a lot, by the way.
King of Queens.
It's not that close.
Sean, you know what Evan just told you?
What?
Not everybody loves Raymond.
Not everybody loves Raymond. Yeah. By the way.
Ray Romano's on the hotline, by the way. He's not happy with
it. King of Queens also banned in my house. My wife thinks every episode is about us. So now
Which one?
King of Queens.
Oh, yeah.
So anytime she watches an episode, we get into a fight as a result.
She thinks that because she's the attractive one and you're the fat guy.
I know, yeah. it's very demeaning.
That's what
she thinks. But Kevin James does something, I get yelled at.
That's funny.
Let's get to some of your calls. Let's go to Joel and Kearney. What's up, Joel?
Hey, guys. Quick question. Let me get to see what you guys say. With next year's draft, quarterback draft being weak, do you guys see Mara allowing Shane and Dable to take them draft? If the season was to end really bad?
So you mean get someone else to draft and then...
Correct.
Right, just start everything all over again. I don't see that happening because, as we've talked about, we know that Dabes is he can develop a quarterback. We saw it with Josh Allen,
mm-hmm.
who had kind of worse stats other than the completion percentage than Anthony Richardson
right.
in the first 10 or so games of his professional career. And obviously he's turned into an MVP candidate, finished second a few years ago. So I think Dabes deserves to try to draft someone himself. But there's other options, and we'll talk about this at some point, but we talk about the Jaguars. With the Jaguars tear it down, they got a bad quarterback deal. Would you trade for Trevor Lawrence?
Mm.
He's 25 years old. Like, yeah. He just turned 25 years old.
You got to pay the money, though.
Yeah, but it's not. You're not paying the signing bonus.
Yeah.
So most of the proration stays with the team. So it'll stay on the Jags cap.
I guess you could do this with Lawrence because he's 25. Don't you, as you said, want to see Brian Daboll develop 100%, his prospect?
100%. But when you're 25 years old, I mean, Cam Ward, who Sean loves and everybody keeps talking
about. He's almost the same age.
He's 24.
Yeah, when he gets drafted. Crazy. That's crazy. And by the way.
And Trevor Lawrence turned 25 a month ago.
Yeah. They're all older than Juan Soto. I'm just kidding. It's close, though. I think that, to answer his question, I think that it's going to have to get very bad for Dable and Shane to lose their job. Now, a quick pivot is 2-8 really bad? We're not there yet.
But I think it also almost has to be record bad also.
Yes.
But then, like, locker room.
Other stuff bad.
Right.
Joe Judge didn't lose his job because of the record.
No.
He lost his stuff because it was other stuff bad. So to me, and I've always been open to this, not that I expect it to happen, but I'm open to the possibility it's going to happen. The way we would have a change in administrations with the New York Giants is if it got bad in a surprisingly bad way.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet. Right. Is it possible? Of course it is.
I think the other thing with Joe Judge, it was the Gettleman, whatever, retiring.
Right.
Also. So if you're going to bring in a new general manager, you have to let him have his own coach.
Absolutely. We'll get back to your call. Sean's got a Cinco de Five-O, and we're starting to get a clear image on who's in on Juan Soto.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.